Hello and welcome to another edition of Tech Wrap.
Hi.
The podcast. It's online at techwrap.net. And I think we're up to episode 5 now.
Yeah, episode 5. Techwrap.net is my homepage.
Sure it is.
It is. It used to be Google and now it's techwrap.net.
It's just techwrap.net.
Yep.
Whatever you like.
Google search bar on there so then I can just search from within our website.
Search for what within
like
our website?
Like a Google search bar.
Yeah, but what do you want to search
Whatever
from?
I search for in Google.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So it's ready for you to do your internet search.
Yeah, so I don't need to have Google as my homepage. I can have TechWrap as our homepage, and then I can Google search within it.
Fair enough.
Rather than going to Google, you know, typing it in.
You know what I was also thinking about? I'm sort of only half doing the social media thing.
Oh.
We don't have a Facebook page yet. Oh,
we don't need one. Why are we doing a Facebook page?
to have some adoring fans.
Yeah, well, they can follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Twitter is the go.
We have some people following us on Twitter.
New people?
The handle is TechWrap Podcast. We do have some new people. Of course, this is on the spot, so now I'm frantically searching my phone to see whether I can find these new people. But we do have new people because I get notifications to tell me.
Yeah. So head over.
When the news people are following.
TechWrap Podcast.
Correct.
On Twitter.
Correct. It's got a nice new logo on there.
Beautiful.
New followers, Joel Sulman, Brad Mills, AU.
Braddy.
And a guy who supports me with my podcasting, and I support him as well because he's a good guy.
Is it me?
Guy Mylecrane.
Ah. Hello. Welcome.
Guy Mai.
Thanks for
g'day,
following.
G'day. Welcome to the TechWrap Podcast.
We tweet some stuff.
We tweet stuff. I think I need to tweet more tech news, though.
Yeah.
Because I tweet more about, you know, what we're doing with our podcast,
yeah, maybe
and that's
like
not
some,
much.
Some interesting stuff, yeah, we can put in, start getting some, tech feeds going. Speaking of tech, what's been happening this week? What's come across your radar?
Across my radar for the tech news of the week that I do on the radio, Google Plus. This service that...
Did anyone use that?
It tried to take on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
But it lacked a few things, and that was...
willingness of people to actually use the service.
That one.
Because I feel like they forced it upon everyone.
They
tied it in with your Google account, then they made it linked with the YouTube account, so you couldn't help but use their service, even if you didn't want to use it. And even and Android phones as well, when you sign into your account there, the Google, it's pre-installed on all Android phones. So, yeah, they got a lot of people... using it, and I'm doing the same things like in inverted commas, using it, but not because they went out of their way. And I don't think it was a bit of a fad where like tech people, Google Plus, get on Google Plus.
And they get on it.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
And there's no one on there. Like,
what's happened to it?
Well, they've finally decided, well, you know, after 4 years of trying.
It's been that long.
Yeah, apparently. It's not actually working the way they wanted it to.
Really?
So
that's no real surprise.
And after the times where they've forced it upon people, they've realised it's not working. So let's start taking this all apart, they're thinking now.
Yeah.
And they're going to turn off those needs to be on Google Plus to, say, comment on YouTube and a few other parts of their website, and slowly Google Plus is going to dwindle into nothing and get closed up.
I'm sure they'll take apart certain things that they used it for, like businesses, I think, was nice, because you could then do a Google search and you'd have all the business times and stuff and things like that integrated in that way.
Well, that's what they're planning to do. They're planning to take the best bits out of Google Plus. So like even the chat facilities, integrate those into, you know, your mail and docs and whatnot. You know, the features you've mentioned, all the good bits will come out of it, but they'll gradually close up Google Plus because it hasn't worked.
No.
And it wasn't going to work.
What's a circle? I still don't even know. 4 years later, I still don't know what a circle is. Well, yeah, I do. It's still weird. It's like, what do I add you to my circle? Do I have an overarching circle that encompasses multiple circles? What if I don't want this circle to see this other circle, but I want person in this circle to see this picture I posted for the other circle? Like, how does that work? Yeah, it's very confusing.
It's challenging. Very challenging.
And then you could add people to your circle and then not necessarily vice versa, but you'd still know, because sometimes I'd get of my Google contacts that say, hey, Geddes has added you to his circle. add him to your circle. I was like, what? Do I have to?
It was very convoluted.
So I'd know people that were on Google Plus and then adding to circles and then, yeah, I didn't know whether I should add them back to a circle. Yeah, the whole circles thing and the social media platform, it failed. Like, aside from when it first came out and people were like, oh, this is the new thing, yay.
And they got on it and had a go,
because Facebook was like, oh, we don't have to use Facebook anymore. Yeah, Google Plus, it's going to be awesome. And it has qualities like integrating with Hangouts and stuff like that. You can do video calls, conference calls with everyone in your circle. You could share documents through, Google Docs.
Yep.
You could upload stuff to Google Cloud. You could do stuff to Google Photos and stuff. And they tried to encompass it all into one service and then market it as, social media, but it was always kind of the best bits of everything jammed together. So it's good to know that they're now taking what they learned from jamming it together and then taking the best bits from that and then sort of separating them back into where they came from and making those individual services better.
And I make the observation that Google always learns the hard way with some of these things.
They do, yeah.
The other product that I know a lot about is radio automation software. And Google decided they'd buy into the radio automation game. So they bought this old package, which was called Maestro, which a lot of the metro stations use. And they decided to jazz it all up and make it, 2010, I think it was back then, make it the brand new good-looking automation package. And as soon as they had, within a couple of years, they realised people weren't buying into it much. So they gave up on it. They sold it off to another company.
Yeah.
And that company's supporting it and doing well with it, but it wasn't anything while it was in Google's domain.
Yeah, Google, they're very much kind of they're not afraid to fail with things. They just a lot of trial and error stuff and the whole Google Labs thing where they're prototyping all these new softwares and, some get off the ground.
And others
some last a week, some don't even get off the floor. And that's very much in the culture of Google because they have that whole philosophy of if you're working for Google, they sort of give you, times where you can just work on your own project in Google time. Maybe one day a week or several, I can't remember the exact time, but you can just work on your own stuff. And they very much encourage you to work on your own projects because, it could be the next best thing, next big thing.
And I guess being someone like Google, the amount of money they make in a day, they honestly don't care that they're losing.
Oh, yeah, they got nothing to
the
lose.
The amount of money they're losing.
Yeah, it's good because some of the best ideas have been spawned from just guys, off doing their own thing.
Agree. So, yeah, Google Plus is disappearing slowly.
Hey, Geddes.
Not unexpected, though.
Do you ever send an email to someone and then wish you hadn't?
I've done it before.
Send an email and you just wish you could take it back. Or maybe you've gone back and you've reflected and you thought, maybe I could have worded that a bit better.
Yes, I do that.
Maybe this isn't good if it stays on record forever. Here's a thing that might be for you then. Speaking of trying new things and innovations and things like this.
Doesn't have anything to do with Google, does it?
It does.
Yeah, I got it.
It does a little bit. There's an extension you can get currently now through Google Chrome.
Oh, great.
And it's called Dmail, a Dmail extension for Gmail.
Dmail for Gmail.
It adds this little slider down the bottom whenever you compose an email. And if you turn Dmail on, this will give you control over your email message where you can, destruct that message.
Yep.
It could be, the D could stand for destructive mail. Or destruct mail.
Yeah.
It's coming together now. So you can set either a time limit on your email, or after you send an email to someone with Dmail on, you can choose to destroy that email.
That's
and then that will be removed from their email inbox. Now,
How do they destroy the email?
So here's the thing, it's integrated into Gmail.
Yeah.
So if the person you're sending the Dmail to is also with Gmail.
Yeah.
Using the integrated system through Gmail, it'll just get rid of it. And that person doesn't need to have Dmail installed.
That's what I was going
to
say.
For you to destruct that email. And if you send a Gmail to someone that isn't using the Gmail service. Yeah. You're saying Gmail, 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 Gmail.
Yeah, it's yeah. getting confusing here.
So if you send an email to someone that isn't using Gmail,
yeah.
it'll send them a link saying, this email message has been sent by Gmail. Click here to view the message. So then it opens up on another okay. server. Yeah. So that's how they do it. And then you'll be taken to a web page with the email message, and then you'll be able to view the message there. And then if people decide to get rid of that email or destroy it after 3 days, it'll just get rid of it from that server.
Yep.
So I think it sends it to the Gmail server then to Gmail, and it's linked within Gmail, so that's how you can do it Gmail to Gmail. But if you send it external, then it will be hosted on this other web page that you
and
click on.
And they control the mail.
Yeah, but how crazy is that? You can now destroy emails.
It's handy. It's got some handy situations. You wouldn't use it in every email message.
No.
But
it's like the Snapchat of emails.
But yes, it is.
Yeah. Like, can you think of scenarios where this would come in handy?
I can think of many scenarios where this can come in handy. There's occasions where you want to send information, but you don't want people to be able to keep going back to it.
Mm.
Like, there's situations in a business sense where you might send a login to something to someone so that they can access the service for a specific point of time. So if you sent them that, I mean, they can still do copy and paste.
Yeah.
But the average person doesn't copy and paste.
Especially in businesses, I guess, like account numbers, credit card information,
billing
reports.
You shouldn't be sending credit card information over email.
That's true.
But
I was thinking like billing reports, company finances, things like that.
Invoices. Stuff that you don't want to be able to, for someone to keep around for ages, other than maybe, you know, if they try to save it somehow.
About sending a really angry email to your boss.
Mm.
Just going off at your boss saying, "Yo, shit, I don't want to work here anymore." And then you're like a drunken night. And then you wake up in the morning, like before nine, he's like, "Oh, crap. I should delete this before the boss gets in," and then you just distract it. So I can imagine like maybe like some drunken emails or some really angry emails, and then you send it, you're like, "Oh, I'm so mad." It might be like a product you bought or something. You're like, "Oh, this is what," I don't know, just yelling at people, getting angry at people for whatever reason. Then you sit back and you're like, "Oh, that felt good." And then you're like, reflect on it and you're like, maybe that wasn't a good idea because I have to work with this person.
That one self-destructs in 20 minutes.
But see, the fatal flaw, of course, you know, if you are sending emails and anything that you want to monitor, there's a button on your keyboard that says print screen.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know, like the only thing, if you know it's a Dmail,
yep.
Because if you're not using Gmail, then I guess you could just like print screen and then you have the message.
You've
for
got
it
the message
anyway.
Yeah.
But I think if they're using Gmail, they wouldn't be any wiser if you were using destructive mail.
Yeah.
So then people wouldn't, unless you're like a really paranoid person, you're screenshotting all your emails and creating JPEG backups. So that's pretty good. So if you're using Gmail, you won't know that it was a Dmail, and then you just check out your message one day and it's not there anymore.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to develop that further.
It's got some uses, but it's also got some situations where it'd be a pain in the neck because not everybody uses a Gmail service.
Mm.
And so those situations, people, those click through
yeah,
to see,
they're
this
always
like
the worst. Sometimes I send an email to a business or something and then it will say, this person is using spam protection service.
Yeah, and you've got to click through.
And you have to like click it to verify that you're not a
spam bot. Yeah.
And then once you've activated that, it'll remind you and then you can send them emails.
Yeah.
That frustrates me.
That's
so
annoying.
Much.
Yeah.
Because a lot of that spam stuff is built into most email clients and services these days. Like they can detect spam and things like that. And those third party services that do that, I think, are just holding on to something that's, you know.
It's nice to have something server-side to be able to reduce the load on your server because every spam email is taking up space. So to have that happen on the server and then people use...
Do you ever get spam stuff to your...
Yes. Yeah. We do get a volume. It's a small volume because there's some server-side software installed which filters out the common spam. So it's not filtering everything and it's not getting people to confirm that they're not a spam bot, but it looks at the trait of how the email is being sent. And so if there was spam...
I'm a Nigerian prince.
Yeah, those sort of things. Or if there was a repetitive spam.
Enlarge your fingers. enlarge your bicep.
That'd make it harder
and
to
other
type.
Parts of your body. Yeah.
Those sort of things. Yeah, anyway, yeah, you get the idea. So, the common trait emails get ignored, but there'll be the odd ones that still filter through because they don't follow that pattern. And we're not rejecting everyone until they confirm, because that's ridiculous. Yeah. Because there's times where things can't confirm, like when you sign up on a website, you know, you set up a new account on an online store, and it sends you an auto email with your password. Now you're not going to be able to get that to confirm, because that's an auto sending thing. So,
very specific
it's not logical.
Business that we'd use it, maybe like a really small business. But anyway, Dmail.
D-mail.
Google Chrome extension. Check it out. Have some fun with it. Send some snap mails.
Snap emails.
Snap mails.
I do like Google Chrome.
Send your some pictures to people.
Might have a go at that.
Yeah, D-mail. Check it out.
Now, what isn't being done here in Australia in terms of being able to recycle technology is trading systems through shops.
Like, what do you mean? I have a Surface 2 and I want to get a Surface 3. Take my Surface 2 and...
Yeah, and give me a little bit of money for it, and then I can get a Surface 3, and then perhaps somebody else could use that Surface 2, because the shop could sell it a bit cheaper through another channel, or, you know, sell it on eBay or something, and someone who really does want a Surface but can't afford the Surface 3 might buy that too, or just needs something for a certain purpose.
It's a very interesting topic.
There's a website that does it, or a couple of websites here in Australia. One of those is Mizuma Mobile. Have you heard of those?
No.
So essentially what you can do is they offer cash for mobile phones and tablets. You put in what mobile phone you're planning to sell, and it gives you an estimation, and then there's some sort of system that you post it into them, and then they transfer money to you, and you post it in and whatnot, and you get some money out of it at the end. But that's using the whole, like, using mail, and you can't just go and drop it off somewhere and get your money, like, immediately. It's got a delay to it.
Very much like selling on eBay or...
Yeah, it's a bit like that as well. And some people just find that a bit frustrating, and they don't know how to do it, and they're not interested.
I might be getting a new, like, when the Note 4 comes out.
Yeah.
Sorry, Note 5.
Note 5.
I have a Note 4. So if I go to these guys, I could say, hey, I want to sell my Note 4. But I assume their price would be like an average median price. I could probably get more selling it on eBay, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they tend to do that. But, I mean, there's people who will be happy with that. What I'm getting to is...
Yeah, you have to do it online. You have to post it. You have to... There's a rigmarole. You can't just walk in somewhere. That would be nice.
It's a lot of stuffing about. And aside from that, the only other thing you can do is drop your old phone into one of those... mobile muster bins, and then it gets broken down and recycled. But, you know, new phones, you don't really want, like, not new, as new phones, like a year old or 2 years old, you're not going to want to do that.
I'm interested because I have a video card. I upgraded my video card last year, and the one previous, I was like, oh yeah, I'll just sell this on eBay. It'll be fine. But then I was like, I never got around to it because I have to take pictures of it. I have to
upload my eBay, set up research
previous prices of video cards and
work
how is my
price.
And there's like so there's research, photos, upload. And I'm like, how much do I need to charge for shipping? And I need to calculate weight, parcel, how I was going to wrap it. So I was like, this is too much effort.
And then once
a year later and it's still collecting dust, like a $600 video card top of the line. And it probably could have got like $450, $500 when I sold it. Yeah, now I'm not going to. But like at the time when I was going to think into selling it, I would have had $450 more than I have now instead of a bit of, you know, circuit board collecting dust in the bottom of my jaw. So help me.
Well, I'm not going to be able to help you in Australia as yet, but it's a model which some shops here in Australia could do, and it's a great idea. The Argos chain in the UK has decided to offer trade-ins for old phones and tablets. So you can essentially go in there, drop your old phone in, and they can give you a figure, like an amount on a gift card or whatever, and then you can go and spend it on your new purchase.
Just drop it off in the store.
So it's all done in the one transaction. There's no stuffing about, and you know, the whole process doesn't take long at all. I think there should be more stores around Australia doing that. I've heard whispers that Apple does a little bit of it, but it's more of a, if you know about it, you can get it.
They don't really promote
they don't,
it.
Yeah. They're not keen on promoting it because they know people would go in droves and do that sort of thing.
Yeah. And well, then now they will. With all those Everyone phones. Listening to this.
Oh, I suppose so.
What have we
yeah.
done? Sorry, Apple.
But, you know, it's a great concept. It's helping recycle things, you know, things that aren't completely done with can get another bit of a run before they do hit the scrap heap.
And most people, what do? They just, like,
I'd say they just sell it in an auction or put it on eBay or something like
You've
that.
You've gone through a few phones. What have you done?
Well,
you're probably a little bit more vigilant than the average.
I'm a little bit more vigilant with when it comes to phones because right in front of me right now is an iPhone 6 Plus.
Beautiful phone.
And, of course, that only came out last year. So I've got a cycle of 1 year at this point
in
time.
What did you do with your last phone?
So what I did with my last phone is I put it on eBay.
Yeah.
So you know you get told when they're going to launch the phone about a month before. So I wait till about 2 weeks before it's about to launch and the market is still hot for the previous model.
Gimme.
So I jump on eBay and sell it then. And I hold on to it right until, I'm probably not 2 weeks, about a week before. And so I hold on to it right till the point that I change over. And as soon as I change over to the new phone that day, I then reset it, pack it up, and send it off to the person.
Yeah.
So perfect. I've been able to make the good price before the new phones are gone on sale, kept it right until the point that I've changed over.
No downtime.
And then sold it off and not a care in the world.
So if there was a store down the street, do you think you would could go down there and see what they had to offer, or would you still sort of put it up on eBay?
I would entertain it. I'd certainly entertain it to see what sort of fear it is.
Pricing, and that's the thing. Like, how does then that business make money? Like, if they're being competitive to how much you would sell it on eBay for, then they're not going to make more than that,
well,
are
yeah,
they? So how do they make it money?
You're probably,
that's the hardest thing,
I think. You're probably not going to get a great load out of it. But
so I assume they'd need to charge less, and then what do they do? Do they then resell it in the shop, or do then they sell it on eBay? Or do they just take your phones, or do they sell them as well? But isn't that just like a pawn shop?
They're probably selling them like a pawn shop style system on another level, like an auction auction house or something.
So at this place, they just take the phones. You just take it to them.
Well, they're a normal.
Could I walk in there and say, "Hey, I'm after a phone"?
They're a normal shop, so you can go in and go, "I'm after the new iPhone Plus."
So then
6
they
Plus.
Might say, "Oh yeah, hey, we got one. Someone brought one in. It's used."
Well. No, I wasn't going from that tangent. I was going in and saying, I want to buy a new iPhone 6 Plus and I've got this old phone and you can go
and
they can
it.
Go,
yeah.
Oh, well, we'll give you this for this one and you could use that towards this one to discount this one for X amount. I don't know that they actually sell. I don't think they do any selling of the phones in the shops at the moment. But they're finding another way of being able to recycle phones and also give the customers the satisfaction of trading in their old phone and getting a new model and not having the drama of jumping on eBay or other auction places or going to a pawn shop. Because even if you go to a pawn shop, you get the same situation. They're only going to buy it for a certain amount because they need to make money on it. And they're going to be...
I'll give you $50 for your iPhone 6 Plus.
Yeah.
It only came out last week. $50.
They're going to be banking on the fact...
75. It's the highest I can go.
They're going to be banking on the fact that you're going there to buy something. So they're going to get your sale. That's where they're going to be happy that you're in the store. So, but anyway,
brick and mortar eBay, no, not even.
Bricks and mortar.
It's just like somewhere you can go, just walk in, here's my phone, here's some money, done, easy.
And now I'll buy a new phone from you.
No more dusty circuits sitting in my room.
It's cool. And speaking of the iPhone 6 Plus, by the way, I got this one from Telstra and I've got it on the... new phone feeling. They gave this new phone. They used to charge $10 a month for new phone feeling. And so what new
is that like new car smell? Is that
yeah, it's a bit like that.
Okay.
So the iPhone 6 S or whatever it's going to be called will come out in a couple of months' time.
iPhone 6 Plus Plus.
Yeah, whatever it's going to be called.
That'd be nice.
And so essentially what I can do, because my phone is in good condition, as I can show you now, it's fairly pristine.
You keep it in a rubbery case. You never let it touch the ground.
I can put it back in its box.
Always in a soft spot.
I can put it
never
back.
Never being dropped. Not a scratch on it.
Well.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it is good. I can put it back in its box, take it back to Telstra when the new iPhone comes out, like line up on the day with this phone.
Are you going to go iPhone again, you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah, iPhone for life.
Well no.
Come over to Android.
No, well, hang on. iPhone for the next installment.
Okay.
And then when the contract's up, I'll see how things are good or not. But yeah, I can go into the Telstra store next time and just hand them that. And they'll go, oh yeah, you've got new phone feeling. All right, here you go, your new iPhone. And I haven't had to do anything.
Maybe you could get, after that, maybe you could get a Windows phone to go with your Surface.
If the Windows phones translate better than they have in the past.
Sync it all up. Wherever you go, you can go on the road,
because
do all your stuff on your phone, go to the office, and then on the tablet it'll be perfectly synced. Then you go home and it's like you never even left.
Because the one problem I had with the Windows phone is the lack of applications. Because there's not as many people developing for Windows as there is iPhone and Android. So
Windows 10.
Windows 10. Yeah, I suppose it's going to provide some unifying between the desktop and the phone and whatnot.
Everything. And a lot more people are going to develop for it as well now that it's finally out and it's kind of like the final version. It is finally out. It came out.
It is finally out. It came out in a matter of a day or two
So the
ago.
Updates, I think, are rolling out now.
Progressively.
So people
Not everybody's going to get it immediately.
If you jumped in line first and say, hey, yeah, I want to do it, upgrade those people that did that months ago, they're getting the updates
now.
First and then everyone else rolling out. I saw when we were out there, it said 14 million, they reckon, people have installed Windows 10.
I don't believe that.
It's a bit hard to imagine. Is it, though? Like, in the world, you think nearly every machine pretty much, well, okay, Macs are pretty popular, but the majority of operating machines would be Windows.
Yeah.
And a lot of people buy, like, laptops and stuff, and they come pre-installed with Windows 8, and all those ones would have had the update down the bottom. So in 3 days, like, 14 million doesn't seem like a lot.
Well, if I just scan to my friends list, I would say I've seen at least 3 or 4 people who have actually done some sort of download for
That's
Windows
crazy.
10.
Maybe they're including people that have clicked the box
download,
saying,
yeah,
I will upgrade to Windows 10 when it comes out.
It's got to be counting something.
A lot of people to be clicking Windows 10 or upgrading to Windows 10 are in the process of upgrading to Windows 10. It's huge.
It is big. It is big. And it's getting to the point that Microsoft servers aren't coping very well.
Everyone downloading said they're restricted.
There's restrictions in place. And that's what they were trying to prevent with the idea of a progressive rollout. And there's people like me who have the I want it now syndrome.
Because you're going to put it on your Surface?
I want to put it on my Surface.
So you had the thing that popped up and you clicked up?
No, not on my Surface tablet. No, that's the one place. One place I haven't seen it.
So it was mainly desktop machines, was it?
It was everyone, but mine just seemed to be hit and miss. I've got a desktop computer which actually indicated it, but I can't recall seeing much of it on my tablet.
Yeah.
But what I have done overnight is I've actually downloaded the ISO for Windows 10.
Oh,
so the CD image,
nice,
for those
yeah.
who are not in the loop. Although they should be in the loop if they're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll be in the loop.
And the only hurdle I've got to is the fact that it doesn't accept the theoretical Windows key that this device has. Because if you have a look at Surfaces, and I'll just bring my Surface 3 over.
How are they rolling out the updates to the Surface, do you know?
Well, it'll be the same as the desktop computers.
Can you do it through the Windows Store?
Well, it just comes through as an update.
Yeah, okay.
So it's exactly the same as a desktop computer.
Maybe it'll take a while then.
But the difference in the desktop computer to the Surface tablet is the fact you'll see Surface and look on the back and you can't find anything which even resembles a product key.
Yeah.
They don't put the product keys in.
It's like on laptops, you look at the bottom and they have the key with the laptop and all that and if you never need to reinstall.
Because this is a Microsoft device, the sneaky buggers have embedded it into the BIOS.
Yeah.
So you can obtain...
So you can't install it because it tells you to enter a product key.
Yeah, and I try to enter the product key, which is theoretically the one that is for this device, and it doesn't like it.
Yeah, maybe it's the ironing the bugs out. I've heard there's a few bugs and
So I can't glitches. Currently install it. I could install it with another key. I could get another key from somewhere and make it happen. But I'm sort of teetering on, should I do it or shouldn't I?
I don't know. Do you have the urge?
I have the urge. I'll probably end up doing it by the weekend.
A lot of people, yeah, well, they're cool. You can listen to how it goes. I'll probably be, I don't know, actually. I'm a bit more, I'm on 8.1 at the moment. And
That's 8.1.
Like, I watch all the videos and the dev previews and I check out the reviews and stuff and go, oh, yeah, that's really cool, you know, bringing back the start menu. Mm. Why that ever went beyond me.
That's what people wanted. Crazy idea. They didn't want that other thing.
No, exactly. So then, and then... I'm like, yeah, that's cool and stuff. But then when you get down to it, what are you doing? I'm watching like Netflix, maybe doing some Word document editing and playing some games. Like, how's the Windows 10 experience upgrading to 10 going to change what I do significantly? All this other stuff that they've got and the new features, it doesn't really appeal to me that much. The new like DirectX 12. Yeah. It will be, I think, Windows 10 only. So you eventually, when games and stuff start using DirectX 12,
start phasing out older machines.
Exactly, you'd need to, you'll need, if you want like the best latest graphics experience, then I think would be a time to upgrade to 10. There's 10, the 10s people say, you know, wait for the Service Pack 1 and then you're pretty much safe. Because the early days is kind of, you know, they've just released it. They're still a mass release. There's people are finding bugs or software incompatibilities and programs not running as like they should. Maybe apps aren't compatible. So they're rolling out updates to Windows 10 nearly every day, I think, fixing something or another. So my experience isn't going to significantly change. I'm going to take advantage of Windows 10 that much immediately. So I'm sort of like, I'll wait till they release like Service Pack 1, all the updates are ironed out. Although they might even not call it Service Pack 1. It might be just this list possible, of progressive updates continually forever till it gets better. Mm. So maybe 6 months down the line or something like that, then I'll go, now it's time to upgrade.
You are an wise one in that regard, because what I was going to say is, you know, if you're any sort of power computer user and you're using some fairly intensive packages, like we're sitting in a radio studio at the moment and we've got a radio automation package, you're not going to run Windows 10 and get that to work. You're not going to be able to run, you use Avid video editing, you're not going to be able to get that to run on Windows 10. Easily, at least.
Or something, one plug-in of that software might go wrong.
Pro Tools is not going to work because Pro Tools is going to need a driver for a device and it's not going to like Windows 10. All these situations, there's billing software for health systems that I know have said, do not install Windows 10. You won't be able to use our software. It's logical. But I'm keen to just jump in and see how, because they've said there's been performance improvements on Windows 8. Yeah. And I have actually had problems with Windows 8 because being a Microsoft Surface tablet, you everything is pretty much software controlled. So your little buttons on the side to adjust volume, they're all software based. To change the brightness on the screen, that's software based. And there's one situation that I had with Windows 8 while I was away, while I was on a conference trip, is my Surface just locked on full brightness. And I never run anything on full brightness. Yeah. And I tried to adjust it and it wouldn't adjust. Windows just decided it wouldn't do it anymore.
So after all this and all you've told me and stuff, you still reckon you're keen to get on a board straight away?
I'm keen to jump on and see what happens.
If I had a separate laptop, like all I used to have a laptop.
Yep.
Long story, it's in another country now. It might have been like left behind. It didn't make it onto the plane.
Was that accidental?
Yeah, accidental. Like so. I lent it to my mum. Mm-hmm. She was in another country and she forgot to bring it back.
Oh.
So now my laptop is sitting in a country in Europe. I'm here in Australia. We should go on a mission to retrieve it at some point. But anyway, so
it's probably outdated
at the moment
now.
I currently have just my desktop. Yeah. But if I did have my laptop with me, I would probably install Windows 10 on my laptop.
Yep.
I'd keep my desktop, the same everyday way. Machine that I use, keep it the same. I know it's compatible with everything I use on it, but I'd try out the new features and have a play around with it on my laptop. Speaking of which, some cool new features.
There's actually a guy at work, by the way, just before you talk about the new features, that is using Windows 10 in the work situation.
Who is it?
His name is Brendan.
Ah. Well, no, what's he using? A laptop?
Yeah, well, no, he's using a Microsoft Surface.
How do you get it on a Surface?
He's probably still using the technical preview version.
Oh, okay.
But he's actually been using it in the work situation.
Has he told you anything about it, like how he's liking it?
He said he's been liking
feedback.
Yeah, and he's got one of those Surface docks here at work. So he rid himself of the annoying work laptops that don't have enough RAM in them. Their CPU is not great. The hard drive's an old mechanical one.
BYO.
And he just BYO'd and bought this stand and everything. And so he's got two work monitors plugged into this thing so he can do dual screen, keyboard, wonderful.
Beautiful.
You know, fast machine, SSD, running marvelous, running all the applications, and he's not having too many dramas as far as
genius.
I can wear. And he can even use our VPN, which is, I think it's a secure pulse service. And people have said, you know, some of these systems won't work with Windows 10, but he's found one that goes.
Proven them wrong, defying all the odds.
So features.
Living the dream. Yeah, so
living
here's
the dream.
Some of the highlights that I've sort of come across watching videos and then just reading up on the base.
Yeah.
Of course, the biggest one for me, and I think a lot of people, is the start menu is back, thank God.
Yes, well, you know, no one wanted the start screen. It was this advantageous idea to provide an easy experience to new users of computers. But of course,
touch screens.
Which was funky, but it alienated all the previous Windows users, especially those that are aged over 60.
Yeah. How do I access my stuff?
Where's the start menu?
Yeah, so that's back.
How do I turn this thing off? I hate this crap.
They've had a bit of a compromise. So, like, you know, before it used to be like the live tiles, the Metro UI thing, and then goes to your desktop. Now when you hit your start menu, you can still have your live tiles integrated. In the start menu, you can have all your old school programs. So it's like a compromise between the both. We brought the start menu back. Within that is kind of like the old Windows 8 Metro UI, but toned down a lot and stripped down to kind of like, you know, the essential stuff you need. So that's really cool.
Because people were really getting sick of that.
Yeah, I'm sick of it. Don't show me that. You can now have virtual desktops, multiple virtual desktops within your
machine. This is kind of like what like Linux were doing moons ago.
You could get third-party programs and download stuff to do this, but now they've included it within the base operating system. It'll be used by, you know, power users, select bunch, but for those people that do that, it'll be nice and easy and stuff like that. They can do some cool stuff in there. This is one that they sort of promoted and I saw in demonstrations and stuff. It's like their live snapping of like tiles or apps now running their own Windows apps. Before they used to be like just a full screen thing, and there was no like a taskbar. You had to click up the top and then drag down to close
it, or
drag it across. So they come in Windows now, which is how they should always have been.
Yes, like
and then
this.
Exactly right.
And,
so like,
and there's no button.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just have to know that you have to drag it down to make it happen.
So now you can have that Windows there. And also there's like the window snapping thing. So which like Windows has always done. Like if you grab a window and then you drag it all the way to like the left view screen, it automatically resizes to the left of the screen.
Which frustrates me a little bit.
So if you have two Word documents and they're both open full screen, you can drag one out to the left, then drag one out to the right, and then they'll both be resized nicely on your screen. That's been around there forever, but now they're promoting in Windows 10 as kind of like a smart snapping. So if you have sort of stuff cluttered everywhere and then you drag it, everything will just arrange itself.
Everything.
Nicely. Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's not that big of a thing, but it's still kind of like a cool little thing. I guess you'll randomly stumble across it. I wonder how many people do that resizing stuff anyway, as just like alt tabbing to whatever.
I don't do a lot of the resizing, and sometimes that snapping business
frustrates
me.
I have a big 27-inch monitor, and if I'm browsing, I'm going to just... Ideally, I want two monitors, but right now I have just the one, and sometimes I snap my website to the left of one and maybe watch a video.
So do you want two 27?
I think would be ideal. No, maybe. I'll have to think about it. Or maybe I'd go like...
240 inches?
Nah, 227s, yeah. Yeah, 227s would be amazing.
Look, you know, I'm very happy at the moment. I've got two 19-20-inch monitors, and they work just fine for me.
Once you go 27, you never go back. That's a whole other topic. Like, I got 120 hertz, you get 144 hertz now, and then you get 4K monitors, and it's like the compromise between having a huge refresh rate or a huge resolution. I don't know. We'll talk about that another day.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Windows 10 also now Cortana, the virtual assistant,
yeah, Cortana,
is implemented into the operating system, so you can hit start menu, go to Cortana.
It's accessible and you can do, down the side of the start.
Yeah,
bar,
you can just click it and go, and then do searches like Google Now searches like, hey, how tall is
a goat?
A goat. How much does a goat weigh?
Yeah. You
know, where would I find it? What's the time in London? Whatever. So, you know, we're very familiar with Siri, Google Now, and Cortana is the Microsoft one that's on phones, I think, now they can get it. But now they're bringing it to the desktop. So if you want to use it, you can.
And you got to have a microphone for that. But then again, like these devices.
Like most all laptops pretty much surfaces do. Only
they've got
like
a mic.
PCs don't. But like, I don't really think everyone's going to use it because, I mean, how hard is it just to do the... You're not going to pull people out from Google searching. Just like open up Google, type your search. You're not going to use Cortana to find your information. On a desktop. Maybe on Windows, it'd be quick. Maybe on the tablets.
On a phone.
Handheld. But like on the desktop machines, which is kind of the perspective I'm coming from, it's not that great. I'd probably turn
Why would you? Because you're already sitting there. Yeah. You're in front of it. You just
everything,
tap.
Yeah.
Oh, look, there's Google Chrome. I press a button. Wow, I've got a
Although
website.
We won't be using Chrome, we'll be using Microsoft Edge.
Edge?
Edge is the name. Do you remember what it was called before in the testing?
No, Spartan. I can't remember now. Oh, yeah, Spartan.
It was
there you go.
Spartan in their web browser. Their new web browser replacing Internet Explorer.
So why did it go from Spartan to Edge?
Spartan's a bit too hardcore, I think.
It's too warrior.
Yeah.
We like less warrior.
Too Halo, because you're like a Spartan in Halo, right? And then Cortana.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, Edge, I guess, because, you know, Windows have edges. I don't know. But basically, it is kind of like their new revamped Internet Explorer. They're moving away from, like, the negative connotations that IE has brought over the many, many years. They're trying to pull people away from Chrome and Firefox.
Why do we want to
Safari.
Use it,
Safari, yeah, even though you're not going to, like, because essentially it's kind of still Internet Explorer. And you're not going to pull people away from, especially not now either, because right now on release, you know, all the great extensions that you can get for Chrome, endless, like anything you do, like Netflix, you can get an extension that will tell you what other people have thought about a program. When you hover your mouse over it, their ratings, it'll link you to IMDb, everything. It'll tell you what's trending, what's hot. And that any service, there's an extension for ad
there's
block.
There's nothing for
like no script, things for blocking scripts running on your page. Adblock's a really big one. So extensions, there's no currently extension support for Edge.
Of course there isn't.
They'll probably be down the line to come, and if they want any hope of competing with those other browsers, they have to do that. But, I mean, who's going to develop for Chrome, Firefox, and Edge?
Can I point out that, you know, redesigning the UI and making it a new beaut-looking thing, but not having any extensions or anything like that, is a bit like a streaker putting a jacket on and walking out into the public.
Yeah.
And then someone quizzing him about what he's doing, and he opens up. It's like, well, it's the same old shit.
Yeah, so I don't
it's
know how
just
many people
a new
are
going to
use. Like, I'd try it out. Oh, another thing, the cool thing is, like, on the tablets, and I suppose you could do it with your mouse and stuff or with your finger, you can do annotations straight to the web browser. You can do clipping, so you could clip a news article and say, you know, hey, check this out. Or if you're, like, an editor of a magazine, you can be cross out a news headline, but no, I want this. But, like, aside from the very niche things, like, no one's going to be drawing on websites and then sending it to their friends. Like, I can say this because I have a Note 4 that has a stylus.
Yeah, you can draw on everything.
And you can do that exact same thing.
But you don't use it.
On anything. I could snap notes and drag and blah. I could do annotations, send them to people. But I very rarely use the stylus.
Yeah.
I'm sure there will be, of course, there will be people who use it. But
there will be.
In terms of, like, the majority user base, they're not going to be drawing on web pages, sending it to their friends, or chopping articles and sending it. Like, for the mobile platforms, tablets, maybe it's a bit easier. But again, I'm coming from the desktop perspective. On a desktop, no one's going to be using this feature because you can just, like, copy-paste the link and say, hey, check this out. You're not going to go all this effort. I suppose even on tablets and surfaces, you just copy a link and send that to your friend. You're
usually,
not going to cut a specific part of an article and then write, woohoo, or I enjoyed this. And then they just have an image. I guess they could see maybe where the image was linked from originally, but just send them the link.
The most I do
it's
on
a cool
the
idea, and it looks good in a presentation, and say, blah, 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 but, like, you know.
That's it, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the most I do on a Surface tablet is maybe do a screenshot of something. Like, there's applications like Flipboard where you read the articles. Mm. And so I'll screenshot the full article in Flipboard and then email it to myself so I can print it at work. I might use it like that. But but yeah, none of this drawing on the screen and, and copying this and emailing this and
much like a sales tactic. When you're talking about a web browser, you should be talking about extensions, performance, like how fast can you load stuff, like HTML5 performance, benchmarking against the other browsers. Yeah. Not like, hey, we can draw on our screen and clip things.
You know what it is? It's presentation wank.
Well, I suppose, like, you know, we'll use Windows 10. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
See if you can install it, and we'll give some feedback on our user experiences in the coming weeks.
Here's a bit of a lighthearted one, only for the fact that I have to sit and laugh that it's happened. You know, like in China and Thailand and stuff, you get all the knockoff goods.
Yeah.
All sorts of knockoff goods. And I'm not.
Panasonically.
Panasonic.
Sam Wong. Samsung-y.
Yeah, you got the idea.
Yeah, right?
And over in places like Thailand, they brandish the actual real brands on the products, and it's like it's a definite knockoff because it like falls apart in 2 months.
So they might have like a Samsung monitor, they call it Samsung, but the actual panel will be some really, you know, really dodgy panel from the backwoods made out of sticks and cardboard.
Yeah, you got the idea. But I mean, panels, actually, that's one thing you can't really stuff up. Even the cheaper panels come from one of the big factories. So,
I think there's like three or so manufacturers that put, and even like
screens.
A Samsung panel, they might not even.
You have a Samsung panel
it
in it.
Come from somewhere else.
It'll be an LG, for instance.
Yeah, you don't even. Yeah, unless short of opening up the back and reading the panel, you won't.
But people don't do that, and it voids your warranty, of course. But aside from that,
I encourage everyone to do it. See, that's what I did when I was buying a new monitor. Like, because I was buying, I can't remember what it was called, but there was two or three different panels in the same branded monitor.
Wow.
And apparently one of the panels had a better color reproduction. Mm-hmm. So I was going around and I was trying to find this specific panel for my monitor. Mm. It might be a bit, this is about 5-6 years ago, but and I'd go around to stores and I would open up, not in the store, like I'd buy it, I'd take it home, then I opened up the back and then see if it was the panel I was after. And then if it wasn't, I may or may not have taken it back and then bought it from somewhere else, opened it up to see if it was the panel.
Wow.
Best one. I still use it today. I love it.
Oh, it's great then.
To Samsung.
So the story I was getting to, I've gone a little bit up the hill.
I know, I got a bit carried
before
away
before I got to the story, but there's so much counterfeit product coming between China and Thailand and stuff.
Especially now, it's so much easier because anyone could just put up a website, right, and say, hey, this
and
is
sell
this,
it.
And then they ship it from China and you could be getting anything.
So this mob decided to make a knockoff iPhone, which was never going to end well. And they've got like to the point where...
$200 iPhone or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Really cheap iPhone.
Running Android and...
Really? An iPhone running Android?
No. The knockoff iPhones run Android. They modify it to make it look like it's half
iOS.
Oh,
so they're running Android, but they skin it to make it look like
iOS.
Okay, I'm with you now. Yeah.
To make it look like it's an iPhone.
And then sell it as an iPhone.
But it's not an iPhone. It's not an iPhone. So there's been a factory behind the scenes. It's had 6 production lines and hundreds of employees, and they've been churning out something like 41,000 bogus phones.
Whoa.
And millions of other tech goods, you know, like they're probably knockoff computers and tablets and shit. And they've been going. They've managed to earn $19.4 million before they started trying to export them to the USA. And customs caught them.
That's insane.
And decided to check out what they were doing and found this factory. The factory was branding itself from the outside, like not the factory as such, but the company was branding themselves as a mobile repair business. But they were making phones on the side, making tech goods on the side.
And it's, how are they selling it?
Well, I'd say they'd be selling it in the trade scene, like
businesses and stuff.
Alibaba.com that sells like bulk items to businesses.
So they wouldn't necessarily know they had a ripoff, would they?
They wouldn't necessarily understand it if they weren't a very good buyer. But yeah, I don't know why this is so cheap.
Oh, well.
We don't usually buy iPhones at this price, but yeah, it's a good offer. I'll buy 41,000.
That's incredible.
No,
that's a lot of money. So what they've had to. Is it currently
They've been busted.
Yeah.
They've been busted.
They might have to pay it all back, and who knows what sort of legal repercussions. But that's a hilarious story.
It's completely ridiculous. They thought they were going to get away with it, but they're done in. I mean, there's lots
happens
of...
all the time.
There's lots of other businesses over there that are knocking off.
And
yeah.
Stuff, and it's so easy to. But speaking of not knockoffs, but just cheap electronics, you know the manufacturer in... Is it China? The what is it? The Xiaomi phones?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
They're kind of like they're running Android and they're kind of like your really budget devices. Mm-hmm. They're only kind of sold in China. And they are actually becoming more and more popular, even more popular than Samsung.
In their country.
The yes. Mm. And Samsung's actually like slow. I think I was reading something just quickly. Just they're not posting as high of a profit as they had expected. Cheap electronics to the masses, I think, could be really profitable. And that's what's so appealing and so easy to make a lot of money off people, because people want like a really good device really cheap, because you're paying like $800-$900 for a premium phone when it comes out. And then these people can offer something for, say, $300 that works almost as good.
It does depend what it is,
you're
though,
gonna do that.
Because there's some things that you just don't need to be spent wasting your money on, like cheap chargers on eBay.
Oh, yeah.
A laptop charger for $20 is not going to be good for your computer, your house, or, you know.
Even cheap laptop
It's not even going to last long.
Replacement batteries are really cheap.
You really...
A dud that doesn't hold charge.
Yeah, you really have to skim across things, because with batteries on eBay, often they make the battery up using smaller cells.
Yeah.
So it's a dodgy thing, like using TV remote batteries to build a larger battery. And so that's why you don't have the capacity, because these things aren't made to hold that and aren't made to discharge that. So, the laptop chargers, you open one of those up and they don't have half the circuitry they're meant to have in them. Like, they charge a device, but they're not doing a very good job at it, and, you know, it's making all this noise around your house. lots of buzz.
The sign of a good quality charger.
Yeah. Yeah, you turn on the radio and just hear that through all your different channels. Yeah, very good. You need to be very careful as to what you do buy in knockoffs. And there's some things that are quite a good knockoff. Like, I was looking online because I'm in community radio as well, doing a bit of, I fix their stuff on the side. I was looking at these things called RDS encoders. And basically what they do is the modern cars that have the text feature in their car, in the vehicle, you can put these things into your setup so that they display information. Like, you can put song information through the radio so people can know what they're listening to.
Yeah.
I didn't want to pay.
Like, the songs will come up. What songs?
Yeah, what song it's playing. Cool. Yeah. So, or in the city, they still actually use them in the city, like Sydney, for instance, to display traffic information.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lane closed on the M4.
On your radio.
On your radio.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get one, but I didn't want to spend, because we're a community station, I didn't want to spend $300 getting one of these devices. I've actually gone on eBay and found one for $50.
What?
I haven't bought it, but
$50.
It'll require
the gamble.
Yeah, it'll require a little bit of work, like me to actually make up the power, put the power supply onto it, and make up a few connectors for it. But
yeah, Jesus.
It'll work for me.
Is it a cheap knockoff of something?
Well, it's a cheaply designed circuit for the intent of providing this service. Anyway,
it's gonna explode in 2 weeks. So I mean, somebody's.
I hope not.
$20 million, you say?
Yeah, pretty
That's
much.
Insane.
Pretty much. It's mental. It's mental. It's amazing.
What's the world coming to?
What is the world coming to?
Same as it's always been.
Yeah.
Making money.
Anyway.
Any way you know how.
Yeah.
I'm hitting the corner after this.
And one more thing. The cheaper end of the smartphone as well. The new OnePlus One is out. OnePlus One 2.
How much is that?
They're looking, I think, around about $395 US.
So that's so appealing, yeah.
So, you know, you add your Australian tax, as some people call it.
People always need the latest and the best, like us.
And this is a flagship phone. You can check them out. Do a bit of a Google.
I have seen it. I haven't looked into, you know, the specs or reviews and stuff. But like even, but you can pretty much, there's a reason it's that price. You know, it's going to be lacking in some.
Yeah, it lacks in features. One of the things they left out, which other phones haven't at the moment, is NFC.
I was reading that. They was like, no one uses NFC anyway. We don't need it. We can save money and give you a cheaper phone. And I'm all for that. I have NFC and I have for the past, you know, a few generations. I even bought NFC tags thinking, oh yeah, this is going to be great. I'm going to put like an alarm setting on this. So as soon as I put it on the NFC, it'll automatically set my alarm. I can have an NFC quiet mode when I, like, I don't know, enter my room to watch a movie or something. I just hold my phone up against that tag. It'll automatically put my phone into quiet mode.
Did it happen?
I never got around to it. And I've never used NFC ever. So I agree with them.
That was a waste of time.
Like, yeah, it's like, no, that's it. That's it. No NFC. So like, no one does. Like, it's all above. You go out in the street and you ask, hey, what's NFC? No one will even know what it is. And or how do you even incorporate it like efficiently as opposed to like a QR code?
Or they'll go on about how people steal information using that thing on the card.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I don't know. NFC, don't need it, I guess. Yeah, not right now, anyway, until it's widely implemented and maybe, you know, until it's widely implemented and I actually have a nice use for it on a daily basis, you can easily go without
it. So people are actually buying these.
NFC rant.
The OnePlus ones, they're only available by an invite system again, still.
Oh.
But, you know, for someone who's wanting all the great features of Android on a newer device, things are
great
bang for buck things that you can check out.
Especially at this point in the production cycle of phones, we're probably like 6 months away from seeing, you know, the new flagships coming out. Mm-hmm. We're going to probably see the new Note series coming out towards the end of the year, end of October, sort of when they do the announcements. And then, you know, 3 months later, we'll see the new S series, whatever they're coming out there, and then the iPhones and stuff. So I guess in the low period, if you're like going to recommend someone a device, say, hey, what should I get? Maybe just recommend them this because that would be like a really solid buy. And then you say, oh, yeah, maybe then next year you can get the new Samsung S20 or whatever they're calling it now.
Might be good by
S9.
Then.
Boom!
Ridiculous. Yeah. It might actually be good by
then. The Nexus 6s are looking pretty cheap now.
I'm bagging you out. But then again,
I wasn't even paying attention. I was just thinking of all the beautiful Android
friends. Think back to previous episodes of the show, the podcast. You've canned me for being an iPhone user.
Yeah, it's clunky, kind of widgets.
Oh, here we go.
Customizability is just not there. It's just not as zippy.
Well, that's a few things.
Although I have had some gripes with some software that I've wanted to use on mobile, I thought was really cool. And it's like, coming to iOS first, Android coming soon. Screw you, software developers that do that. They got to have some deal with Apple or something because there's no way. But that has annoyed because like iOS, I think, still is the thing like, oh, most people have that. Is what people
are
thinking.
Yes, it is the vision.
It might not be the case now.
Well, it's a bit more balanced 50-50
now.
It's more balanced
now. That still annoys me. Exclusivity on one device should be a thing.
Well, that's only a few of the things that happen in technology this week.
It was like a light touch, but I feel like, as always, we could probably talk for hours.
Yeah.
I assume we've got to put a time limit.
Well, we've almost exceeded our time limit. I call a time limit an hour.
I'm happy with what we talk about. Yeah.
It's been great, and there's so many other things that you could look into and cover.
Which we'll probably talk about next week.
But tech is changing every day, every hour.
Yeah.
So all this stuff has happened, and you know, you could be finding more online right now, and we can be talking about it. But we'll talk
about the fun bits, you know, to talk about and discuss.
Back and forth. We'll talk about some interesting stuff in the next edition.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Look, I'm on holidays next week, but... Ooh. But lovely. I'm still keen to podcast.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. Keep your
eye out. We've got technology.
Yes.
We use technology.
Good. We'll make it work.
We can make it happen.
Where can we find it?
Where can we find it? Online, techwrap.net. You can search iTunes.
Yes.
And we are TechWrap, as in...
Easy.
All one word. And you can find it quite easily.
First one that pops up.
And find us on social media, on the Twitter, the tweets.
At TechWrap Podcast.
There you go.
Follow us.
Follow
tweet
us.
Tweet some stuff.
Say g'day. Send us a tweet.
Yeah.
Do
Spread
something.
Spread the word.
Share it.
All right, I'm out of here. I got to go work the corner. fair. See you next week.